If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks, for closet Christs. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings and the divine love of the one omnipresent God. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening, our seminar topic is Fault Finding Forfeits Freedom. Fault Finding Forfeits Freedom. So let's take a deep breath and ask that you be opened and that whatever is for your highest and best good this evening comes forward for you in your awareness according to what is for your highest progression at this time. Ask also that anything that can be released that you don't need to carry anymore, that could be lifted to the grace of the mystical traveler, of that divine presence that works with all of us to give us the keys to higher awareness and freedom of soul. And then get divinely connected. To have ongoing spiritual awareness and its resultant clarity requires your connecting your soul with your human mind. That creates a corridor for the downflow of constant and continual clarity from your higher nature, so that your human personality can receive direct guidance. The reason why you have bumps and jumps and laps in awareness is because that conscious connection in most people is lacking. To create it, you need to utilize your own will and your intention. Your intention is actually the exercising of divine will. As you exercise intention, and we do this with every single seminar, we start with having you take a deep breath and consciously intending to connect with your higher nature, your higher self, your soul, whatever you want to call that higher part of yourself. That intention with a breath is cutting to the chase. I mean, that is the simplest, most direct way for you all to get connected. It can be very complicated. You can work at building this inner connection, which is what has been called the Antahkarana, or the Antishkaran, or the Rainbow Bridge. Just about every meditation technique that connects you with soul in some form uses those terms in some way. I simply teach it as taking a deep breath with the intention to connect your higher soul, your higher levels, with your human mind. And we flow that energy down in a corridor of golden light from those higher levels of yourself, whatever you want to call them, into your human mind. And then you flood your brain, your mind, your nervous system, and your whole body with illumination. You illumine yourself. This is not something that can be given from without. You must take that initiative to go for it. You must exercise your willingness to go for God. Go for it. Don't sit passively. That's the old approach. The proactive approach at this time is to exercise into those levels that you would stretch into and connect with. And that's what we work with each week. So again, let's take a deep breath and exercise your intention in bringing that connection between your spirit, your soul, your mind, and your human personality in one unbroken stream of golden light. And just open yourself now to what you would like to receive for this evening in your understanding. So we resemble what we keep company with. Energy follows thought. And thought always produces form at some level. So our mind, our body, our life actually assumes the shape and nature of our mind's content. This is something very important to understand. Your mind, your body, your life is simply condensed, objectified thought. That's all it is. So our mind actually takes the shape of our consciousness, our thoughts. And I'm going to share something very sacred with you now. That is the secret of divine intimacy, communion, and living in the presence of God all the time, or the kingdom of heaven. And how that is that we experience who and what we keep company with in our mind, in our thoughts, in our visualization, and what we constantly envision and picture in our minds. That's what we are hosting and increasing in our life. Now, most meditations start you with some form of visualization, whether it is the form of Christ or Sai Baba or one of the other divine avatars, or it's an impersonal image like a candle flame. The mind needs to be focused, otherwise it scatters. It needs to be brought to a focus. You can also use the sound current, the name of God, the living word, which is an inner sound that you listen to. But it's also very useful to pick up a form of God that you have absolute total love for and no shred of doubt. So pick that name and that form of the beloved that makes your heart sing and ring with divine resonance and loving. And visualize that when you meditate. Try to draw the form from head to toe as if you were an artist. Or, if you can't do that, look at a picture of Christ or Sai Baba or Krishna or whoever it is that you most associate with the embodied divine, or candle flame, and picture it until you begin to form a very strong mental image. As you fill that image each day in your meditation with your devotion and your love, and you contemplate it, your mind takes the form of that Lord. Now, what happens is that when you meditate, you close your eyes, you may find that the actual Lord steps into that thought form that you've created. You'll actually notice sometimes in your visualizations that they will go from like a static imagery and take on sudden life. And that's when the Lord actually, the radiant form of the Master, actually comes in and inhabits the place that you have created in your consciousness to receive the Lord. You have prepared a place to receive the formless God, who will take then the form of your devotion. Whenever you say the name of the Lord with love and devotion, the Lord is constrained to immediately appear because the name and the form are one. So you can't say the name of the Lord without the Lord manifesting. That's why we're told not to use the Lord's name in vain and to never use the name of the Lord as a curse word, ever. Always speak the name of the Lord with the utmost love and devotion and humility. Not as something distant and separate from you, but as your divine self objectified. You are the Christ. You are the Avatar. You are Jesus. You are Sai Baba. All names and forms are of the one and only Divine Spirit. And your name and your form is also a manifestation of that one divine indweller. So that is the absolute truth. And that is the absolute quintessential essence of creating conscious communion and intimacy with the Lord. What you hang out with and keep company with is what keeps company and hangs out with you. So, fault finding forfeits freedom. Whose freedom? Your freedom. And also my freedom, should I slip into forgetfulness and exercise ignorance by finding fault and pointing out the evils and errors of another, or society, or the world. Another important key is to realize that others, society, and the outer world exist only as images your mind has projected. They exist in your mind and nowhere else. The great Krishnamurti, the great 20th century enlightened master teacher, he wrote many books about this, about the world, that you are the world, that everything you see is actually contained within your own mind. You'll find that many of the most enlightened teachers speak about that. Sai Baba does. Sai Baba has said that our body, our environment, everything that we see around us is simply solidified mind. It's solidified thought. Think about it for a moment. Your body is solidified mind. Now, if you want to go beyond body confinement and definition, just experience the energy in your body. Start with something that's easy, like try to feel the energy inside your feet or your hands, either one, whatever's easier. And gradually work with feeling inside your skin, inside your body, until you can, in one moment, experience the totality of the energy flowing inside your body. That's a very good way to anchor your energy, by the way. Now, when you feel your energy as an inner energy body, then expand it beyond your visual form. Expand it beyond the definition of your physical body until you experience yourself as that energy that keeps expanding, has no confinement, no limitation. That, beloved, is awareness. That is you. That is your divine essence, which in full mastery you can adopt any number of forms and appear in and out of any time cell or period of history. You can appear in and as anything you wish or any number of things. That's why a master, Sai Baba, for example, can be giving a lecture in his ashram in India, and at the same time he can be physically having dinner with devotees up in northern India who have never been to the ashram. Or he can be at the same time saving someone from an accident in America or someplace else in the world. He has omnipresence at that level. And that's your destiny too. You're destined to be omnipresent everywhere. Omniscient, all-knowing. And all-powerful. Like genuine, authentic power is you, divested of ego and the sense of being simply a human. You are not a human. You are God, having a temporary human adventure. So this is the truth. This is cutting to the chase. And this is something that, as you dwell upon it and contemplate it, you will enlighten yourself, because the truth within you will bear witness to the truth as you realize it. So finding fault with others is actually one of the characteristics of the deluded mind, suffering ignorance. When the mind, human mind, falls into the mode of ignorance and darkness, it mistakes the unreal for the real and ignorance for wisdom, which we would have to say is like the epidemic that's infected most people at this time. They don't really know who they are, what they are, or why they're here, or even that there is a higher purpose to life. And that's why these particular seminars are for you who are teachers and writers and exemplars and way showers, because the things we share each week are for you to take, realize, and then as you realize and experience these things, to share them with others. So enlightenment is not taught, much as it is infectious, it's caught. You can catch, those higher frequencies of consciousness. They can jiggle those dark places of ignorance within you awake. And that's why it's valuable to interact with people who have genuine spiritual experience and thus something genuine to share. Someone who is sharing only out of an intellectual level does not have the power to quicken that deeper knowledge in you. You'll have to be with someone and listen to someone who is actually teaching from direct awareness and personal experience. It's very important. So Jesus, in reference to beholding the faults in others, had this to say, and I'm paraphrasing, "Why are you pointing out the splinter in another's eye when you have a log in your own eye?" And he was often saying, what you do to another, you will reap in exact measure and kind in return. So we hear these things over and over from every prophet and every pulpit, but few of us have realized the price that fault-finding is costing us. And that's because, aside from dedicated spiritual seekers, most people are not aware at all of what they're saying or what they're doing or what they're thinking. They're on automatic old conditioned patterns that arise up out of their subconscious minds. So they're not even home. The lights aren't on. They're not truly present. You're just seeing old patterns running. That's it. Old programming. And nothing really is authentic in that kind of behavior. So if you can really get this, and choose a higher approach towards life and people, as well as yourself, you will experience an inner joy and a freedom you didn't even know existed. I know I have, and I'm not the Lone Ranger here. So sometimes a funny image serves in anchoring a teaching and serves as a reminder, like Sai Baba's humorous image and reminder that an angry person is like a dog attacking his own image in a mirror. It's so funny. You know, I can't even see an angry person, that image doesn't immediately come into my mind. And this certainly has gotten me to cool my own temper. You know, I can't really get angry anymore without seeing that, and then it gets funny. And humor actually is the biggest ego buster possible. You know, the ego is very, very self-righteous and serious. But when you can laugh at your own foibles and roll with the punches and be a good sport and just laugh, laugh it off. It's not real anyway. It's no big deal. Just let it go. Get over it. Move on. The karma won't stick to you when you take that attitude and approach. So that's why humor is so great. Now, at the risk of offending some of you, and please forgive me if I do, here is a way of reminding yourself not to find fault in others. You ready? Every time you criticize, slander, point figures of blame, and complain, you're braying like an ignorant ass. Not a behind a donkey, okay? An ass, you know, like a meehaw, meehaw. You are loudly proclaiming your ignorance like a braying ass. So how does fault-finding resemble an ignorant ass? Because an ass lacks conscious awareness of its divinity. Hello? Hello? How can you be aware of your divinity and ascribe fault to another? Those two things cancel each other out completely. So it's only in ignorance that you're ever going to find fault in another. Because no truly God-realized or enlightened person will ever be found maliciously slandering another. The minute you see that happen, you know that person is not genuinely realized and they're acting out of ego. Now, there's envy, jealousy, something going down there, but that is not the hallmark of an enlightened person. In fact, that is how you can recognize a genuinely enlightened, God-realized individual, is that they see only the divine everywhere they look. So, outer focus on the behavior of others and their wrongdoing robs you of self-inquiry because you are in ego mind. And the only thing you're to do is to reflect upon yourself. Who am I? Now, what is this mind that's going out and ascribing this blame to another? You know, watch it. Don't judge it. Don't entrain into it. Observe it. Watch how the ego wants to avoid personal responsibility and accountability. That's how it does that. It points the fingers of blame. And that way, it can make other people wrong for its state in life and its karmic condition that it's created, allowed, and perpetrated, and doesn't want to be held responsible for it. But hello, spiritual enlightenment requires 100% accountability. It requires impeccable accountability and cleaning up your act. All of the miseries in your life come from your having to deal with things you've set in motion at a previous time. Nothing comes to us that has not come from us. It comes round robin, you know, the rooster comes home to roost in the same place. So we really can't give any wiggle room to that part of our nature that would like to make others wrong, the world wrong, our boss wrong, our guru wrong, whatever. So only God is real. Only God is. Everything else, without exception, is something the human ego has invented. Only love is the true nature of everyone and everything. And everything else is a mental aberration. Baba says it's very much like a magician's conjuration. It shimmers only as long as the magician's power holds it in sway, and then it collapses. So, yeah, it's the world holds sway as a reality only as long as the magician, the ego, holds it intact by ascribing blame and seeing separation where none exists. God is all there is, and God is one. You know, when my little girl, who is actually Christ conscious, that's why we named her Krista, when she was around 3 years old, one day I heard her singing, "Twinkle, twinkle, little star, what you see is what you are." And she was going around singing that. And she probably imbibed that because, you know, she grew up on my lap singing Sai Baba bhajans at the Sai Baba Center here in Hollywood. And she was 6 weeks old when she was sitting there for her first bhajans. So she's heard Sai Baba's teaching again and again and again. And here it comes out of a little three-year-old. So Krista was proclaiming the quintessential truth that what you see is what you are. And Sai Baba has told us that one of the characteristics of this passing Kali Yuga that we're now and have been moving out of, which is the age of darkness and ignorance, is to, again, take the darkness as reality and to ascribe wisdom to ignorance. And that whatever evil we see in another will then be increased in our own nature, so that we actually take on that judgment. And we'll have to have that experience ourselves, either in this incarnation or another, so that we can exercise, another choice. And also to experience what it's like to be that person that we've judged, and thus to develop empathy and compassion. So these are very important things for people who are very serious about spiritual freedom in this incarnation. We can't ignore these things. So an ass is ignorant of its divinity and that of others, and it sees only other asses like itself. So likewise, whenever you or I point out the faults of another, or we bitch and moan and grouse and complain, we are proclaiming our ignorance of our divine nature and that of others. We're proclaiming that we have forgotten who we are as a divine incarnation, and we certainly are not aware of it at that moment in the person that we are criticizing and grousing against. In fact, it is the lower ego nature. It's the nature of it. And it is our allowing of that lower ego nature to project its own faults outward. That's its characteristic. That's what the ego does. So again, just learn to kick back and observe without getting involved in it mentally. You don't have to do anything but watch it from soul awareness, and it will dissolve back into the nothingness from which it came. That's where you just watch. Don't process, don't identify with it, just watch it. Let it go. So that's a heavy teaching for a lot of people, But that is why so many of you feel like you have a lump in your throat or a rock in your chest instead of a soft, sweet heart, because the burden of judgment and condemnation and criticism and fault-finding sits heavy. It's the heaviness that you feel inside that keeps you from truly feeling joyous. You absolutely cannot experience the bliss and the joy of your higher nature and sit in condemnation at the same time. Nor can you sweep it under the rug and say, well, I won't focus on that now. I'll be positive. Uh-uh. No. That will stand as an effective barrier against your experiencing of present peace and bliss. So you got to ask yourself, is that really worth the price? My having that temporary ego titillation and sense of self-righteousness, inventing my spleen at that person, or pointing out where they have screwed up and what a rotten person they are? Is it worth sacrificing your own spiritual realization and liberation? Is it? Well, maybe for some of you it is, and then you'll get to come back as many times as it's necessary. But others of us would rather go home this time and not have to reincarnate again. So let's say I'm just speaking to you tonight. So it's that fault-finding that causes you to feel upset and cross and bitter and out of sync in your relationships with yourself and with life, your spouse, and with people in general. And Jesus has much to say about this in A Course in Miracles. He has a whole series of lessons that starts out with, I am upset because I see something that's not there. And he is quick to tell us, you are never upset for the reasons you think. You are upset because you see a meaningless world. You see a world of threat and vengeance and attack. And Jesus reminds us in A Course in Miracles that God did not create such a meaningless world, and therefore it is not real. You know, there is no cruelty in God, and there's no cruelty in his creation, and there's no cruelty in us. But our grievances are what hide the light of the world that we are. And love holds no grievances. It's another lesson from the Course in Miracles. You can't hold the consciousness of loving and the grievance in the same heart. They cancel each other out. They cancel each other out. It's love or grievance. It's peace or conflict. You choose. You've been given free will. You're not a programmed robot. You alone elect where you park your thoughts. So we get upset, and rightly so, when we see a meaningless world, because that's divine feedback, letting you know that you're looking at something that is an illusion. It hurts. It makes you unhappy. Happiness is union with God. So whenever you're divinely connected and seeing through correct divine vision, the payoff is that you're happy. You have a peaceful mind. You're minding your own business. You're cleaning up your own household of consciousness. And you're not a busybody with your nose into the karmic business of which you know nothing of that involves another person, even your own child. Sai Baba told us in an interview very clearly that our children come through us, not to us. They are souls that have their own contracts with God, their own lessons to learn, their own individual thoughts and interests and mindset. So don't expect them to be a clone of you and your beliefs. It's not going to happen. They are their own person, and they're accountable, just like you are, to God. And you got to give them that wiggle room so that they can have the life that that they need to have to learn the lessons that they need to learn. So Jesus goes on in the Course of Miracles to offer to teach us how to truly see. But we have to ask him. We have to give him wiggle room. We have to give him some willingness and something to work with. You know, we got to give him some attention and some interest to awaken. If you do that, our mind is then healed and our perception is corrected so that we will then see the world anew. And that constitutes what Jesus calls true vision, which is different than the ego's projection. The ego projects illusion, but true vision is the vision of Christ. It's like seeing through the eyes of the Master. And that's what you want to do. You want to replace the vision of Christ with the ego's perception of the world. And, you know, it's interesting. You're in the same world, but it doesn't look the same at all. You're actually living in the higher consciousness, often called soul transcendence or spiritual awareness or the bliss of God. And it's supremely peaceful. So when we see truly through Deva Drishti, which is the Sanskrit term for divine vision, we see everyone and all things as they truly are, which is divine, perfect, whole, and holy. Yeah, that's the reality. And that's because all of this negativity is like a bad dream from which we awaken. And then, like a dream, all of this outer drama and negativity simply vanishes with our awakening. So we can only see the divine in another through our own divinity. For we see without only what we have within our consciousness. I was also in an interview with Sai Baba where I was thinking in my mind that it was living in L.A. was like living in hell. I was so assaulted by the graffiti and the gang wars and the riots that we were having then back in the late 60s and the early 70s, it was just like hell. It was ugly, it was grimy, it was dirty, it was gangs and killings and murders everywhere. And I was just horrified. And my first interview with Bob, I'm sitting there and I'm just thinking in my mind, oh God, it's like living in hell here. I want to live in India with you, Swami. And he turned and looked at me, and mind you, I didn't say a word, I was just thinking. And he said, the world takes the shape of your mind, your inner self. It takes the shape of your inner self. When the inner self is totally good, you will only see good in the world. And I swear, after 4 months with Sai Baba, that trip, one of my first trips, I came back to America, and I kept remarking to my husband, Wow, everything looks so clean and orderly and feels so peaceful. It's like, wow, there's really been a lot of changes in L.A., you know, in the 4 months I've been gone. He kind of laughed because my husband wasn't a Venusian master, so he kind of laughed at me, you know. He always called me a little girl in a master suit or a master in a little girl suit. That's what he used to call me. But you see, nothing changed but my inner self. Sai Baba in those 4 months had done a lot of cleaning and reaming out of the ego and correcting my mind and everything. So that when I came back to America, everything looked so serene and peaceful. And that's remained constant to this day. I love Los Angeles. I feel Baba's presence and God everywhere I walk. And it's all because I was cleaned out by the avatar and given a dose of reality and my vision was cleared. So know that, according to Jesus in the Course of Miracles, that the ego is always vigilant for the evil doings of others. It's always vigilant for the ego in others. Again, you know, ego sees ego. God sees God. So depending on what level of consciousness you're looking out of, that's what you're going to be seeing. You know, if you're looking out of the ego, you're going to notice ego in others. If you're looking out of the basic self, you're going to notice the basic self of others. If you're looking out of the soul awareness, you're going to be noticing the soul of others. If you're looking out of the human consciousness, you're going to see what you see on the news, you know, and the social media, and reality shows. So pay attention to what you're seeing, and you can tell what level of consciousness you're operating out of. So that's why we can never change the world, because the world, being a projection of each person's own imagery and interpretation, there's nothing out and about the world that needs to be changed. You know, it's just what you're seeing. And that is an inner correction that's made in the consciousness, which then causes your whole experience of the outer world to change. You can see so many different world views by talking to different people. You know, we think here in America that we're the center of the universe, and you go to another place, like, for example, in India, and, you know, our news isn't the same as their news. They don't care what's happening here in America. You don't hear about, you know, what's happening at all in America. You hear about what's happening in the villages and in India. And I've been around the world some 20 times now, and I found that's true in every nation. They have their own worldview, their own slant of reality, and they're only interested in their own lives and in their own nation and what's happening in their immediate environment. And that's why the worldview is not consistent. It's not the same. And it shouldn't be standardized. We shouldn't all have the same form of government and the same religion and the same way of living life, because different people represent souls at different levels of consciousness that need whatever they're in. You know, whether, you know, they have a king for a ruler, or a dictator, or a president, or a prime minister, whatever, or a king or a queen, whatever they've got, it's what that group of people best needs, and whatever their religion is. You know, everyone is a soul exactly where they need to be to learn exactly what they need to learn for that lifetime. And that's why Sai Baba teaches us to love and respect and honor all names and forms of God, all religions, all cultures, all colors of skin, all types of people. As long, he says, as they don't promote division and discord, or not to support the things where people are harmed and abused and things of that nature. That's where we follow the Gandhi principle of non-cooperation with evil, non-cooperation with things that go against what we know is the love of God. You know, we're not passive wimps. We stand very solidly in our own divinity, and we live our life impeccably through monitoring our expression and where we direct our mind, our thoughts, our speech, and our behavior as we move through our daily life. That's our spiritual exercise. That's our practicum each day. And that's what's going to make you a Christ. You know, when everything but the loving falls off of you, you stand forward as the Christ. You've been born the Christ. So let it all fall. Let everything but the loving fall off of you. Ask the Lord to pick you up by the heels and shake everything out of you but what he gave you, which was a pure heart and an innocent mind and clarity and peace and holiness and wholeness and great, great love that has no limit. So Baba also told us something that I've been meditating on and contemplating ever since. He said that when we understand how dreams arise in our mind during sleep, we will also understand how the dream world we see during the day also arose from our mind. In fact, in Vedic understanding, this whole of creation is seen as the dream of Lord Vishnu, the dream of the Lord. And now we'll go into that in another seminar, but right now I want to focus on this, that all physical form is solidified thought. Your body is solidified mind. And our life, experiences, the world that we see manifest around us is unique to each one of us, for it is our consciousness objectified. You know, think about it. These are really good seed thoughts for meditation. Now, here's the thing that I'd like to share with you from Dr. John Hislop, who was one of Sai Baba's greatest Western devotees and was a very good friend of mine, he and his wife. The title of the book is My Baba and I, and it's about his own God realization, and he attained full enlightenment in that lifetime. It's from a chapter called Pandora's Box. Pandora's box, once open, brings forth a multitude of unexpected troubles. A simple and almost universal human trait could be likened to the cover of Pandora's box. It is a trait which Baba speaks of continually, for beneath it lurks a very great danger that can result in the destruction of one's chance to have a meaningful and liberating life. The human trait mentioned is the widespread tendency to find fault with others. Other people are often faulty indeed, and our indignation at their misdeeds is almost irresistible in its urge to be expressed in words, if not in action. By itself on the surface, finding fault with others is damaging enough. It poisons relationships, lowers the self-esteem of the victims, and brings about a set of circumstances which most assuredly do not contribute to our own happiness. But these are the very least of the evils which spring forth when Pandora's box is opened. Sai Baba points out that when we yield to the tendency to find, talk about, and dwell on the faults of other people, two serious misfortunes are visited upon us. A, the coarse flow of fault-finding disrupts the subtle flow of self-inquiry. And B, one's attention is directed outward to the faults of other people, and with this mindset, one is unable to realize one's divinity. So when you're busy with your nose in what people are doing, or the world is doing, or the Illuminati is doing, or the reptilians are doing, or whatever government is doing, or whatever, you are not focused on your business, which is to realize your own divinity. With that realization, the world, for you, ceases to exist, and you enter into reality. And two, when your attention is directed outward to the faults of other people, you're unable to realize your divinity. And unless you realize your divinity, you cannot make this your last incarnation. You will have to come back. Yeah, you will have to come back because that creates karma. Everything you say against another creates karma. So I'm going to continue reading in this chapter. Self-inquiry, the spiritual discipline which realizes that the things we see in the world are temporary and only the divine is real, is interrupted when we are focused upon the evil doings of others. So the practice of finding fault with others, no matter the provocation, and the self-righteous satisfaction temporarily experienced is a heavy price to pay for the loss of sincere, dedicated, continuous self-inquiry. Sai Baba tells us that it is a desperate blow to liberation, self-realization, and God-realization, which actually are all the same thing, if we exchange a commitment to self-inquiry for the dubious satisfaction of finding faults with others. Let us learn through our own observation of our own mistakes, and let others learn likewise through their own faults. Their business is their business, your business is your business. Your business is only to love them and forgive them and see the best in them and send them the light and wish them well and stick to your own business. So neither of the two learnings are aided by the practice of finding fault with others, whether we wish to inquire into ourselves or we wish to practice, you know, being the divine self that we truly are. They're interrupted by fault finding. Survival of ourselves as spiritual aspirants demands that we find a way of living in society which is not based on the practice of finding fault with others. You know, we have this world which is based on nations attacking nations, religions attacking religions, pastors attacking other pastors, politicians attacking other politicians, scientists arguing with other scientists. Now, everywhere you look, you know, there's this faction and feuding. So, continuing on with the book. The second vital spring of life, which is caught off by finding fault with others, is the confident assertion of one's own true identity as the divine. Sages of ancient times have declared to their students that as one thinks, so one is, that where one's thoughts are, there consciousness resides. The avatar of the age, our beloved Baba, has told us this truth of life in even stronger terms, and mark this. Baba tells us to never believe that we are human beings who must rise to Godhead. For in fact, we are God, playing temporary roles as human beings. Wow. Never believe that you're a human being who must rise to Godhead. For in fact, you are God, playing a temporary role as a human being. And eventually, we will all merge again into the divine, our source and our reality. Baba tells us to always keep in mind that we are divine. He's given us several statements that he would like us to repeat on a regular basis. He said if we keep this in our mind, we will realize our divinity. I am God. I am not different from God. I am the indivisible, supreme, absolute. I am Sat. Chidananda, being, awareness, bliss. I am ever full and free. Fear and grief can never affect me. Sai Baba tells us to act in divinity, in noble ways and not in mean, petty ways. He warns us that in following the practice of finding fault with others, we are not acting in accordance with our divine heritage, and thus we are forfeiting it. Finding fault with others has a terrible effect of blocking our consciousness from its potential of abiding at the level of the divine. It is for these reasons that Baba teaches that we should keep Pandora's box closed upon this extremely damaging practice. Baba tells all of his devotees, what I want you to resolve from this moment forward, do not find fault in others. Do not scandalize anyone. Do not feel envious or be malicious. Be always sweet in temperament and in your talk. fill your conversation with devotion and humility. Be sweet. Be sweet. Be sweet. Baba often tells us to be like vanilla ice cream. Be pure white inside. Be always sweet. And be cool. Keep cool. Now cool your temperament. Be cool. The foundation for real peace is, according to the Vedas, three qualities: amicability, or friendliness, compassion, and kindness. So our words and our deeds and our thoughts need to always be brought into accordance with the divine word, thought, and deed. And that is to say that we need to speak, think, and act together as one. As we move about with humanity, we need to move in a sense of unity and kinship, without friction or faction, in an atmosphere of love and mutual understanding. That is what is wanted in the world today. That is what is lacking in the world today. Amicability, or friendliness, compassion, and kindness. And it's interesting because those are also qualities in the fruit of the Holy Spirit. And the other is to learn to live free. And as long as you believe that you are the actor rather than the divine spirit through you, you will amass the karma of your actions. And if it's positive karma, then you will have to go to the heaven worlds and work through your positive karma, which means you get to reap the blessings and the beatitudes of being in the heavenly state, but you're not free. You have to reincarnate again. If you do evil actions, then of course you go to the purgatorial or even lower worlds, where you have to work out the results of the torment that you have exercised on other people and yourself, because it's the same. And then you have to reincarnate. The reason why people call these eternal states is because there's no perception of time. They're all states of consciousness, and they're out of time, so they seem like they're forever. So you don't want to go there. You want to move into the freedom of soul. And the price of that is to keep your focus on, I am God. I am forever one with God. I remain as God created me. God alone is real, and all that I see is permeated with divine love. Stay there and let all the rest go. Let's go out chanting. Let's do Om Sai Ram. Deep breath. Om Sai. May all the worlds and all the beings of all the worlds have peace. God bless each one of you. Adonai.